Join Aubrey Masango, evenings on 702.
Mohammed Hossein is an in-depth writer at News 24. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us this evening. New poll by Ipsos. What do we read into it?
Thank you very much, Aubrey. Appreciate it.
Sure.
I think just a slight clarification. Polls are not my forte just yet, but they are very interesting at this point. And I mean, as we get to election season, all these polls come out quite a bit. The work I did at News 24 over the weekend was looking at the election numbers specifically, and those are from the IEC. A lot more reliable detail and data from the IEC, obviously. But I mean, the Ipsos poll itself is very intriguing to follow. And I mean, the latest one, that was released on the 27th of April, I mean, it puts the ANC at 40%, the DA at 21%, 21.9%, the EFF at 11.5%, and, you know, new entrant into the political sphere, the MK party at 8.4%, which is quite a surprise for a lot of South Africans, to be fair.
Well, let's look at what the IEC sees and perhaps compare it to what some of the pollsters have been saying. What do we glean from some of what the IEC has to say?
Yeah, I think one of the startling, numbers from the IEC is around the registered voters as well. I think that is interesting. 69.9% of those who are eligible to vote, registered to vote.
That's a big number.
That is quite a big number.
Yeah.
Yes. It is quite a big number, and it is significant in the sense that, you know, there was 39.7 million South Africans that had the right to vote, or registered to vote rather. So we do have quite a. We're hoping that, you know, the voter turnout will reflect that though, and that's the other key consideration. I mean, voter turnout has been declining quite significantly over the last couple of elections. And I mean, voter turnout does decline worldwide. I mean, I think we started off at 88% in 1994, or 86%, and then moved to 88% in 1999. So we're sitting at around 49%, just under 50% from 2019 in terms of voter turnout. So that is, you know, voters who are registered to vote and then pitched up on voting day.
So I was going to ask that. I mean, does the fact that we've got more people registered, in other words, of the group of people that are eligible to vote, we've got more than 60%. We're almost at 70% of that number having registered to vote. Does that necessarily translate into that being people who will wake up on the 29th, or let's say from the 27th, go to a polling station, a voting station, and actually vote? Is that a natural conclusion and link to make?
Not at all. No. So I think you know the. So let me maybe start off with the numbers though. In a sense that, you know, on the voters' roll in 2019, there were 26.7 million people that were registered to vote, but only 17.6 million cast their votes on the national ballot.
Yep.
I mean, that is 66% of those who were registered. And I mean, you know, of those who were registered, there's a study that was done, I think in 2020, where, you know, it said that, you know, by 2019, less than half of all eligible South Africans cast a vote. The first time it dropped below 50% since the start of democratic voting in South Africa.
How do we mobilize people to vote, and how do we? Is there a way of being able to determine the ratio of registered voters and voting voters, right? Against the efforts that must be undertaken to bring them to the voting station?
Yeah, it's a combination of factors as well. I think there's a lot of work being done by civil society to try and, you know, get South Africans to vote and to see the political system as something to participate in. And it is a lot of voter education that needs to happen. I think there is quite a bit that the political parties themselves can do in that regard as well. And I mean, you know, the most important though is the fact is the trust factor. I mean, you know, if you trust the political system, you're more likely to go out and be active and be a participant in you know, the political structure of the country. And that has been, you know, seen in research over the years all over the world. So it's easy I wouldn't say it's easy to get people to vote. That's obviously why we're sitting in the situation. But the ideas are there. The work is being done. It is, you know, a matter of coming to the table sometimes as well. And you know, I mean, they say apathy does play a bit of a role in this. But I mean, by and large, it is a trust factor between voters and, you know, those who are campaigning to be elected.
Are the political parties doing a good enough job of mobilizing their supporters, their members, their constituencies to come to the voting stations, do you think?
Yeah, I think you know, when it comes to election season, there's a lot of campaigning that's happening. So I mean, they will, you know, you talk about polls earlier from Ipsos and you know, the statistics that the political parties have. So they know and they target the areas which they, you know, where their constituencies are, where their support base is large. And they, you know, there is quite a lot of groundwork that especially the bigger parties do and put into this. I mean, we've seen it over the years with the ANC, predominantly where, you know, they've gone into areas where they are, you know, where they are still voters and loyal, participants, to the electoral process. And they have come out significantly better for it after the elections. Whether this season in the election cycle, they're doing enough to get people who are not registered to come to the party, that would probably be seen after the elections. And, you know, I do think political parties do need to step up a little bit more outside of election season as well.
Yeah. Tell me about what we can expect in the event of us having, I suppose it's an ideal, but a maximum voter turnout versus if we were to see a less than optimal voter turnout. And you give me the numbers that you think would be applicable to this scenario, to this context. But what are the implications for a better voter turnout for the different political parties, and the same for same political parties if the voter turnout isn't perhaps optimal?
So, I mean, I guess, you know, the expectation is that voter turnout is expected to be less than 66%. I mean, the previous three election cycles had 77% starting in, you know, 2009, and then 73% in 2014, and 2019, 66%. So it is expected to be slightly lower than that. And, you know, if I guess a slightly lower voter turnout would not be great for the electoral system in a sense. Who would it benefit, though? That is for the mess to happen at the end of election day as well, because we have, you know, the allocation of seats that have to happen. And I mean, you know, in a sense that they are the regional seats. I mean, as you know, we have three ballots this election cycle for the first time. So, you know, we have the national list, we have the regional list, and those are calculated specifically. They calculated separately and then combined to make the National Assembly, which is 400 seats. And we have independent candidates as well that need to be taken into account on the regional list. So there is a lot of calculation that would have to go into it at the end. And, you know, by and large, the bigger parties are confident that, you know, a higher voter turnout will be better for them. But whether that is true is to be seen again on election day. And I mean, it's all about the campaigning for them at the moment. Smaller parties are campaigning as much as possible. But the consensus is that, you know, a lot of the smaller parties are looking for that, I guess in colloquial terms, they call it the kingmaker seat, you know, the ones who will bring the coalitions together, essentially.
It appears to me, Mohammed, that even the ANC is perhaps even looking at kingmaker politics now. If anything is, if the various, I suppose, polls and the conversations that we're hearing, which suggest that the ANC will go under 50%, I imagine that that means that everybody's resigned to the idea that we are going to be seeing more coalitions than ever before, even at the national level, at provincial level. I imagine that even the ANC is looking to decide how, who it makes, who it goes into coalition with. And in that sense, they too are part of kingmaker politics. So I suppose what I'm asking is, have we entered a space of kingmaker politics in South Africa? Is what is that what our politics is about now, rather than perhaps the ideological sort of politics that we used to have in the past?
I wouldn't categorize it as kingmaker politics, to be fair, but I would categorize it as a as an evolution in our change in political landscape. So, you know, we've had a period where one party has dominated South Africa's political landscape for quite a while, and you know, in new democracies or relatively new democracies, that is seen as normal, and then there's a phase where, you know, the dominant party starts to lose some power, as the ANC have done in this case, and you know, they would go into in below the 50% threshold, or at least they would go below the majority. And once that happens, you do enter a significantly longer period, shall we say, of especially if everything remains the same, because remember, there's a lot of factors that can happen and come into play over the next couple of years as well. But we will enter a phase where, you know, the ANC won't be as dominant as they once were. And that will open up, as you say, that the ANC will look towards those coalition, I guess, coalition policies, coalition negotiations as well. And you know, we are definitely entering a phase in South Africa's democratic era that will see, you know, a multi-party contestation of the political landscape. And I guess that's also why we see, you know, 70 parties that are participating in this elections.
I'm saying kingmaker politics because, you know, at some point we used to have the politics of identity. You know, that's how we coined it, where it was about race, where it was about perhaps even class, right? And then we moved into a situation where it was now politics less so about race, class, and that sort of thing. And it became about service delivery, really about service delivery beyond issues of ideology and that sort of thing. Do you think that we have perhaps changed the character of the way that we understand our political party messages?
I, to a certain degree, yes, I do think so. I think we, you know, there is a maturity, if you can call it that, of our electorate, and there is an understanding that, you know, we have evolved a little bit beyond some of those issues. Don't get me wrong, I think those issues will still play quite a large role in the next coming years and yep, for a long time. And it is fair to say that, you know, the issues of race and the issues of ideology still are hard to change. And they're hard to change from one generation to the next as well. And I mean, elections and political landscapes are a generational thing, you know, in the broader scheme of things. So, I mean, we still have, you know, generations who will vote. And I mean, you know, the data that we looked at over the weekend does have, you know, the age categories between, well, from 40 upwards has quite a significant amount of voters in that category. And they were around in 1994, you know, to vote. And, you know, they still have that level. But we are seeing, you know, an interesting time and period in the next three elections, essentially, where, you know, the youth representation, those between 18 and 35, will then move into those next age categories, and they will essentially become the larger electorate, and how they think about things is based on situations and, you know, how government is running things currently. So it is going to be quite an interesting phase to see the maturity, hopefully, of our electoral landscape. But it will also be an interesting time to find out, you know, what is in the minds of the electorate and what considerations do they make when it comes to elections.
And of course, there are new players. As you said, more than 70 political parties will be contesting, but there are new players which even the pollsters are suggesting are taking support away from the older political parties. What do you think this is going to mean for this year's elections? The entry of parties such as MK Party, Rise Mzansi, and perhaps to a certain extent Action SA, to the comfort zones of the older parties, the ANC, the DA, the IFP, and so forth. Do you think that we're going to see significant changes as a result of this, of these new entrants?
You're asking me to make a prediction there.
Look into your crystal ball.
I'll look definitely deep into the crystal ball and see what I can find out. But, you know, there's 31 new parties that are standing in their first election. And as you say, that rightly includes the MK Party, Rise Mzansi, Bosa as well, and Action SA. So Action SA is interesting amongst those four parties in a sense that Action SA has contested,
local government election.
Yeah. This is their first, national election. So that will be interesting to note from them in terms of how they grow into that role. A record number of 70 political parties. And let's not forget the 11 independent candidates as well. I mean, they fought very hard to get onto this ballot sheet and, resulted in the three ballots that we have. And I do think we will see a lot more parties in parliament, if I'm looking deeply into my crystal ball. But I do think there will be a few more parties represented in parliament in the next cycle.
Do you think this will bode well for governance? Because ultimately, all of these efforts, Mohammed, all of these changes, all of these electoral sort of practices that we have, is supposedly for delivering better governance for the people of South Africa. Can we make that link to say that all of these democratic changes that we're seeing are going to ultimately give us a better chance at better governance?
Oh, that is a question. That is a question I don't think we both can answer. That obviously depends on the government that will be formed afterwards. And, in economics, they like to look at historical data and, make predictions based on that. So I think if we look at the political historical data, it's rather interesting to know what comes next. I do think there will have to be a maturity amongst our leaders, political leaders specifically, in terms of, the entering into coalitions, especially considering the coalitions we have seen, at the municipal level and, the local governance level. And if that's anything to go by, it's going to be an interesting time at the national level as well in terms of how they manage that. And I do think, they does need to be serious and hard questions asked of political leaders once they get into those negotiations, into that formations. What happens to the governance? Because as you rightly say, governance has been declining quite drastically in South Africa. But I do think there is a lot to be said that, there are enough politicians, there are enough civil society members, there are enough active participants in our democracy that will help build that or rebuild those trusts within the electoral landscape and within the political landscape.
Mohammed Hussein, thank you so much once again for joining us. Some interesting insights, and I hope that we can have that conversation about these pollsters at some point. I'd love to hear your insights as you get more information and become more acquainted with that space. So I am really looking forward to that conversation with you.
Of course. Thank you very much for having me, Aubrey.
Mohammed Hussain, in-depth writer at News 24, talking about developments in the electoral space.